This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Joy Powers. Yesterday, we talked about the history of environmentalism in Nazi Germany. Protecting the planet was a powerful motivator for some fascists who felt the Aryan race was best equipped to care for the land, air, and water. Minorities, some Nazis believed, were overpopulating the Earth and sapping it of its resources. This concept is called ecofascism, which was popularized by Marquette University historian Peter Staudenmeier in the 1990s. His book, co-authored with Janet Beal, is called Ecofascism: Lessons from the German Experience. The term ecofascism is now firmly in the debate over whether or not coronavirus shutdowns are a sustainable solution to our planet's environmental problems. In part two of our conversation with Professor Staudenmeier, Lake Effect's Julian Haida explores whether ecofascism can be seen today. Julian starts by asking if the people who invoke ecofascism hurt the environmental movement.
From my personal point of view, I am absolutely not taking issue with the enormity and the urgency of the current ecological challenge. Quite the opposite. For what it's worth, I was an environmental activist myself for decades before I changed careers midlife and became an academic. I was an environmental activist for a lot longer than I've been a professor or a professional historian, let's put it that way. So from my own point of view, the whole idea is that we need to be able to grapple with the ecological challenges that our societies are currently facing, and we should not shy away from making some of the really difficult and challenging decisions that we're eventually going to have to make. What I am trying to point out is that there is a constant temptation when we're facing challenges as daunting as the ones that we face today, there is a constant temptation to simplify them in our own minds, just because it can make it easier or makes it feel like they're easier to deal with. And one of those many simplifications is to say, human beings as such are the problem. If we had fewer human beings, then the world would be a better place. When we say that, what we're doing is simply overlooking, we're simply skipping right past all of the divisions within human societies. We're not paying attention to people who belong to different classes, to people who belong to different genders, to people who live in different parts of the world and who interact with their natural environments in radically different ways. And the import that that has, the possibly unintended effect that that has, is that it lets social institutions off the hook. Instead of us asking hard questions about capitalism as an economic system, we stop talking about that, and instead we say, well, if we just had fewer humans, everything would be better. That is the problem that I am trying to warn about.
And what you mention, back to our earlier conversation and back to your historical research regarding 20th century fascism, I mean, I saw the online news outlet Axios referring to the coronavirus pandemic as being a Darwinian moment for business and inequality. I saw David Attenborough, the famed British environmentalist and broadcaster, quoted in the Sunday Mirror just a few weeks ago saying that, quote, part of the natural world is that we're tightly packed into it and we travel as we do. And that suggests that, as you said, it's the number of people. And when invoking Darwin, much as the fascists of the 20th century, the people who are left aside are often less privileged.
Exactly. It's in effect a way of scapegoating an easy set of targets. It scapegoats people who don't currently have much social power, who don't currently have much of a voice, especially in places like Western Europe or North America today. Those differences in power, those differences in social presence, they are absolutely essential for us to understand how do environmental challenges actually work. They don't just appear in the exact same way. They don't affect people in the exact same way. Those impacts are always filtered through social institutions. They're always filtered through structures of power, whether it's economic power, cultural power, political power, what have you. And if we forget that, and if we instead fall into a simplistic view of humans versus the environment, we aren't going to be in a position to tackle the problems, the very real problems that we are currently facing.
I wanted to quote David Attenborough again in the sense that he said he likes the fact that people are working from home now under these coronavirus restrictions. And what immediately came to mind to me is that the people who are considered essential workers, the people who are working blue-collar jobs, working-class laborers, aren't as easily able to work from home, whereas their labor, whether it be, you know, nurses, taxi drivers, isn't necessarily the same kind of carbon output as the people who are working from home who would normally be flying across the country.
Precisely. The people who are currently working from home, at least in the U.S. context, I can't necessarily speak to other countries at the moment, but right here in Wisconsin, a lot of the folks who are able to work at home are people who have professional occupations, people like me, college professors, a whole lot of other people, including people who are still going to work right here and right now. They don't have the luxury of working from home. And usually those are occupations, those are lines of work that come with a lot less social power, a lot less social recognition. It's not just that they come with lower pay, that is part of it, but it's a much more intricate aspect of the kind of society that we're all used to living in. So when I hear comments like that, I have to say that strikes me as, to use a term you mentioned before, that's a lazy response to the challenges that we are currently facing. However, if there is one good thing that we might be able to draw out of the experience of the global crisis we're all currently living through, it might include things like maybe we should radically rethink the structure of work in our society as a whole so that we can both simultaneously make it more ecologically sustainable, but so that we can also at the exact same time make it more socially equitable as well. If we're able to have that kind of a conversation, then we might someday in the future look back and say, this was one of those crisis moments that made us step back as a society and fundamentally rethink some of our basic assumptions.
Now, we don't have a lot of time, but I wanted to ask you one more question regarding how this plays in the United States. We talked a little bit about the European antecedents. We talked even a little bit, and you've researched modern Europe and right-wing environmentalism in Europe. Here in the United States, we're seeing a lot of protests to reopen the economy. There are a lot of violent ideologies that are going into this, threatening public officials who are maintaining stay-at-home orders. I'm thinking of even the Oklahoma City bomber, who was a self-styled eco-fascist, but also defended, you know, the right to bear arms. So how does that play in this time in America? Do you think eco-fascism, neo-eco-fascism, might come back in a post-coronavirus America?
I think that is a distinct possibility. I try not to be alarmist about it. There are a lot of different problems that different people in our society are facing right now, and this is only one of them. But I do see it as a genuine problem. The Oklahoma City bombing is a good example, keeping in mind that was a quarter of a century ago. Some of the more recent examples are possibly even more chilling. Both the Christchurch perpetrator, just to use two of the mass murders and massacres from the last year, both the Christchurch perpetrator and the El Paso perpetrator, they both positively invoked the notion of eco-fascism, presented themselves as proponents of eco-fascism. I think that should be a warning to the rest of us. It's always tempting to think that anybody who manages to somehow combine ecological commitment with far-right political views, it's tempting to think that that must be a tiny and insignificant minority. And I have to say, sometimes I wish that were true. Sometimes I wish the people that I study were as marginal as the rest of society would like to believe. But when we see examples like this, where there's an El Paso, where there's a Pittsburgh, where there's a Christchurch, where you have a series of violent attacks like that in the name of this sort of ideology, I see that as a kind of a wake-up call for the rest of us to say, maybe I should start looking more closely at what that ideology is and why it seems to be motivating apparently more and more people to take those kinds of actions.
And it certainly seems adjacent to some of the protests we've seen the last few weeks.
I would say so. I think the protests that I have a sense of through media reports and so on and so forth, I think they're a mixed bag, but that's the norm. Protests in a time of upheaval, they're going to mix together left and right. They're going to mix together confused ideas with accurate ideas. There's going to be a kind of a jumble and a kind of a mishmash. I think it just takes us, at least it takes me, a while to figure out exactly what's going on and how should I respond to it. It is worth pointing out that just protesting things all by itself, I don't think that is something that the rest of us should be terribly worried about. The real concern from my point of view is, what's the underlying worldview? What are the sets of motivations? Both what are the fears and anxieties that are apparently driving some of the protests, but also what are some of their hopes and aspirations? Do we want a society that allows those of us who already live here and are documented to walk around whenever we darn well please, but at the exact same time is closing its borders? If that's the kind of society that we're genuinely striving towards, we need to step back and think long and hard about the values and principles that would underlie a choice of that kind.
Peter Staudenmeier is an associate professor of history at Marquette University. In 1995, he co-wrote the book Ecofascism: Lessons from the German Experience. The concept of ecofascism has been discussed a lot lately regarding the coronavirus's effect on workers and environment. You can listen to the entire conversation with Staudenmeier at wuwm.com.